Grace, mercy, and peace from the triune God be with all of you.
And also with you.
So I have a question, two questions for you. If corporations can be persons, can the earth be a person? Can a strong belief in the right to life include the radical idea that the earth has a right to life? So way back in the 1970s, Lewis Thomas, a science writer, began writing about this crazy idea he had that the earth itself was a living organism. The earth isn't just a container for life, he was writing. The earth as a whole is alive, living, and breathing. It's like a cell. It has a protective layer around it that we call the atmosphere. Thomas drew on those iconic pictures some of you remember. I think they were from Apollo 8, pictures of the earth photographed from the moon. Viewed from the distance of the moon, he writes, the astonishing thing about the earth, catching the breath, is that it is alive. The photographs show the dry, pounded surface of the moon in the foreground, dead as an old bone. Aloft, floating free, beneath the moist, gleaming membrane of bright blue sky is the rising earth, the only exuberant thing in this part of the cosmos. If the earth is alive, exuberant, a living being, the ground of all life, then it's not a stretch to read the parable of the Good Samaritan on Creation Sunday, the parable of knowledgeable, well-meaning, caring, religiously devout persons, perhaps on their way to services, who walk on by, leaving someone to die by the side of the road. In this case, that someone is our planet. Our planet. A couple of weeks ago, I was listening to that fake news station on my radio, you know, NPR. I know, I meant to give it up during Lent, and I completely forgot, so. And I heard something startling. I've not been able to confirm it, but what I heard was that only 2% of the U.S. population recycles batteries. 2%. Now, even if that's off by a factor of 5, like say maybe it's 10%, and even if you and I are better than the average bear, right, that means there are a whole lot of us who see absolutely nothing wrong with leaving our used toxic batteries with Mother Earth. We have the knowledge, right? We have the knowledge, but at the last moment, we look the other way. We walk on by. And when it comes to helping the earth, I think it's far too easy to look the other way. Canadian journalist Naomi Klein, I apologize for bringing so many Canadians into the conversation. I'm not sure what that's about either, but anyway, great journalist Naomi Klein. She's written eloquently about climate change in her massive book that I still have not finished called This Changes Everything. The subtitle of the book is her thesis. It's a little bit controversial, perhaps. Capitalism versus the climate. Klein says that while many of us would never see ourselves, would never call ourselves climate change deniers, there are subtle ways to engage in it, she says. For example, telling ourselves how clever we are and that surely with modern science and technology, which kind of got us into the problem we're in, surely with those things we will figure a way out. Or being hyper-rational and arguing that economic development and growth and building wealth are the best protection against climate change. Or saying that we're too busy to focus on something that is so distant and difficult and abstract as climate. Or wondering, what does it matter if I recycle or if I drive fewer miles in my car or if I go to the farmer's market? It's just a drop of water in the ocean. And yes, depending on the day, I plead guilty to all of the above. I look at the injured earth, left to die by the side of the road. I look, and then I go the other way. Now, let me be quick to add that in this parable, I don't think that the point is, I don't think that our takeaway from the parable of the Good Samaritan is that the priest and the Levite who walked by were bad people, and therefore we are bad people. I don't think that's the point. Maybe it's that we need a reorientation. Maybe they're like us, and they're good people who are just overwhelmed at times by all of the things and all of the people that we are trying to take care of. And we just walk the other way. Naomi Klein makes an interesting claim at the beginning of her book. She says that the right, as in the political right, is right, as in correct, about the environmental movement. When the right says that the green movement is an attack on capitalism, which you can find in a lot of the writings, the Heritage Foundation, other places, when they say it's an attack on capitalism and a cover for collectivism, Klein says they're absolutely right. Her research has convinced her that doing things gradually, now, in aid of a dying planet, is a losing cause. And that the movement that is required is massive and revolutionary and, yes, collective. It's going to take everybody in. It will entail, she writes, breaking the death grip of the largest, most powerful industry on the planet, the oil and gas industry, which is probably heresy for me to say that out loud in Texas. I know. Get the fire ready. I believe that the church has something critical, something important to offer the new climate justice movement. The worldview that all of us has grown up with, that we've inherited, that we have been educated in, gives no significant place other than purely sentimental to the non-human world, to the natural world. I mean, just think about it. Is the wilderness worth preserving in itself? Or can we just put up condos? How do we decide questions like that? Are they just decided by the people with the most money or the most power? Or is there some inherent value in those spaces? Do individual animals have significance in themselves? Or are they only useful for what they can do for us? I mean, really, what has a golden-cheeked warbler ever done for you, right? And despite the discoveries of Galileo and Copernicus, who said that we are not the center of the universe, our theology has continued to keep us at the center of the universe and to view the earth as a warehouse where we just keep getting stuff down from the shelves. And I think that we have in our traditions something that's so needed. We have an alternative worldview. We keep it kind of hidden away. It's an ancient Christian tradition, and it's long affirmed the goodness and the inherent value of the whole creation. Celtic Christianity. Sometimes it's called creation spirituality. Pelagius, not a household name for you, perhaps, a 4th-century Celtic theologian, gets a pretty bad rap in Christian history. I mean, when we were in seminary, he's the bad guy, okay? Because he got into a fight with St. Augustine, one of the doctors of the church, and he lost the battle. But when I read Pelagius's writings, I find stuff in there that we should be paying attention to. I mean, we don't even have all of his writings, but here's one thing he wrote. There is no creature on earth in whom God is absent. Now, you can see in the 4th century, that might have gotten him in a little bit of trouble, but that's something that we need today. We need to hear that today. The presence of God's Spirit in all living beings is what makes them beautiful. And if we look with God's eyes, nothing on the earth is ugly. It's this tender vision of the whole earth charged with the splendor and the glory of God, and it set me to wondering, wonder, how would things be different if the worldview of Pelagius had won the day? I think we would be more deeply connected to the earth. I think we would. I think we wouldn't just use the earth as a warehouse for our purposes. We would think more carefully about how we use the earth. We would reject theologies that said that heaven is our true home and that we're just biding time here on earth. And we would embrace the truth that this is our home, friends. This is our home. Amen? And the earth all around us, this is the dwelling place of God. And we have a sacred obligation to keep our mother alive and thriving. I don't think we'd have a lot of issue with advocating for more just systems and structures because we would see that everything is interconnected. And we would understand that a policy or a program here that serves me at the expense of my siblings or of other creatures in the natural world, that cannot abide. I'm encouraged by the writings of someone who's actually, her columns have appeared in our paper, Karen Hayhoe. She, I think, is in a class of one, okay? She is a climate scientist, and she is evangelical, okay? There aren't very many of those around. And she is going around and speaking wherever she can be heard to tell her evangelical friends that care for the earth, that climate justice, that global warming ought to be number one priority for them if they're going to continue to call themselves biblical Christians. I like that. Amen? That's good stuff. Go Karen. So when Linda and I were in Ireland last summer, we saw an ancient testimony to this intertwining of the sacred and the created in the Celtic tradition. We saw the Book of Kells. Any of you had an opportunity to see or have you heard of the Book of Kells? It's an illustrated manuscript of the Gospels, the four Gospels. And it goes back to, it was done in 800 AD. I mean, it was hand-lettered and colored by monks in an Irish monastery, and it's on display now at Trinity College in Dublin. The book is tiny. And in order to see all the detail in the book, they have to blow it up on these huge screens that are like 4 feet by 8 feet. And you look at the detail on the screens, right? And I asked one of the docents, I was like, but they weren't writing on something that big. They were writing in a book that small, and they had candles, right? How did they do it? And they kind of tried to explain it to you, right? But it didn't make any sense to me. I think it's a miracle that it happened. It's an incredible book. So in the book, there are illustrations. I mean, there's text, written text, and illustrations. And there are things that you would expect, like Christ and the apostles. There are angels here and there, and there are some of the saints that appear. But there also are animals all through the text. Birds, reptiles all through the text. Some of the drawings are kind of whimsical. There are two mice holding a communion wafer. I love that one. And all through the book, there are patterns of interwoven lines, right? Like vines showing the interconnection of all things. In the Book of Kells, in these Gospels, these Celtic Gospels, there's no sacred and mundane. It's all holy. It's all together. God is not way off in heaven somewhere, sitting in a rocking chair, looking at the earth with binoculars. God is right there in the midst, shining through. It's a vision of the world that if I allow it just for a minute to wash over me, it breaks my heart open. It just breaks my heart open. It's one that drives me back to face my most significant neighbor in distress, Mother Earth. Friends, it's the path of the Good Samaritan. It's the path of compassion. And by the grace of God, may it be our path too. Amen.